Blog Talk Radio.
You're hungry.
I know hypoglycemic induced hostility when I see it.
Just thinking.
About what?
You want to know what I was thinking?
About eating?
I was thinking about Wakanda.
Was that a camp in Wisconsin?
Seeing Abdul Habaz's picture reminded me of Mo and Jada, time I spent in Chad and Sudan. Started thinking about Wakanda.
Where is Wakanda?
It's nowhere. It's a fictional African country. The most technically advanced society in the Marvel Universe. And the richest.
Hold on a second. In a comic book? You just geeked out on me in a real moment?
Hey man, when I was a kid, comic books were the only thing that made sense. It was simple. Good guys versus bad guys. For me, it was all about T'Challa, the Black Panther.
Of course.
Not just because he was a brother who was richer than Tony Stark. T'Challa was a leader, he was a president, he was a superhero, all at the same time. He was all about justice. When I left Brooklyn, the only thing I wanted to see was the motherland. And to witness that world up close. But instead of finding Wakanda, I found poverty, starvation, child soldiers, death squads.
Walt's bread and butter.
Thought I could save more. I really thought I could help Jada.
That whole motherland thing's overrated.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bird, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Well, folks, it's that time again. Welcome to another edition of Afro Nerd Radio, a.k.a. The Comic Shop, a.k.a. The Comic, pardon me, The Grindhouse. Folks, The Grindhouse, for those who are unfamiliar, is a double feature oral blast with myself, D-Bert, Captain Kirk, and, of course, the uncanny Daryl B. Folks, we're expecting a special guest, a gentleman that I had the pleasure of meeting along with the uncanny. We were attending the Black Comic-Con at the Schomburg Museum in Harlem, NYC. The gentleman is Professor William H. Foster. I suspect I'm going to tell a Black Goliath joke. I'll get to that in a moment. But the gentleman is an English professor from Naugatuck Community College, and he is also a comic book historian. So it would be apropos for him to visit Afro Nerd Radio Studios, as well as discussing what's happening or what has been happening in the last couple of days with Marvel Comics, with this whole protected class imagery diversity issue. We have Sam Spap Wilson as Captain America, and also we're expecting a female-wielding Mjolnir. That's right. We're expecting a Thor as a female. So that brings up a lot of issues. All this is happening at the same time. A lot of upset comic book fans and also folks that feel that this is something that's a long time coming, diversity. So we'll get into it. Folks, let's go to a quick urban alternative groove, black rock, nerdcore. You know what we do. Let's make it real simple this time. This is Lost on Repeat by Lyric Jones and Esperalda Spalding. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
There's no melody that works in every life. We all miss a beat, but never lose tempo when the songs are coming. There's no melody that works in every key. We all miss a beat, but never lose tempo while the songs are coming.
11:30 in the a.m. got slumpy bumping. Didn't eat nothing, so I threw together something.
puffing my favorite Spike Lee joint. Do the right thing, cause lately was the case in point. Racism, check. Minimum wage, check. In the hood, being misunderstood by just trying to do good. Trying to get in where I fit in,
whatever that means.
In this male-dominated rap scene, was just not happening. Of course not the way I want it to go. Be undeniable or not as rewriting my rhymes to groom the flow. Feel like I had the world on my shoulders. And hip-hop man, it's like in dog years I get older and bolder. But yet still I'm an infant, repeating to myself
I blow up in an instant.
But like a puzzle piece I have a set place, so I move at my set pace. And it's hard with my game face, yeah.
There's no melody that works in every life. We all miss a beat.
We do.
I never lose tempo when the songs are coming through. There's no melody that works in every key. We all need a beat.
Yeah, we do.
I never lose tempo while the songs are coming.
Friends and fam come and go more like a frequent bus. For reasons why I weigh it heavy when folks say
I love you.
Wish I can keep the good times on.
All right, enough of that. Time constraints, folks. Once again, that was Lyric Jones and Esperanza Spalding, Lost on Repeat. Let's just get into the show. Again, this is the Grind House, and welcome. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Of course, we have the captain. Captain, it's your time. You need it in the ready room and on the bridge. Let's get to it.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield, let's go.
All right, and of course we have the indefatigable, uncanny Daryl B.
Let's help the people out there. Let's use the line from Battlestar Galactica. It's all happened before. It will all happen again.
Excellent.
So why are you getting mad?
That sums it up.
Yeah, well, I'm not mad about it. I just, again, we're expecting Professor William H. Foster, the comic book historian, to put this into a certain context, and we're going to go into his history a little bit as well. But we've seen this before. It's not going to be a permanent thing. The only thing that seems to be permanent in the comic book world is that Uncle Ben always remains dead. He remains dead. You know, we're talking about what? He's been dead for at least 50 years. About 50 years. That remains unchanged, but you never know. You never know. I think the professor is waiting in abeyance. I think he's at our studio doors now. Theater of the mind, folks. Theater of the mind. Professor Foster.
Yes, indeed.
Welcome to Afro-Nerd Radio.
It is a pleasure to be with you, Tony. Thank you. No, please. There's so money.
Yeah. Listen, we had the pleasure of meeting you earlier this year at the Black Comic Con at the Schomburg. And actually, I remember seeing you from the documentary that included the late... The late Dwayne McDuffie, who we were fortunate enough to interview before he passed on.
Oh man!
We took a shot, a real hit with that gentleman passing, because he was the one in this medium that really pushed people of color, pushed diversity, and doing it in a very masterful way, not in some kind of knee jerk way. He was really and pushing with a lot of gravitas. So. We took a hit with his passing. So I wanted to talk to you because, well, first of all, you came at the right time because there's a lot of things going on, which I'm pretty sure you've heard, with Captain America and
yes,
Thor. But before we even get into that, let's get into your history a little bit. Now, you are an English professor at Naugatuck Community College, correct?
I am indeed.
Right. And you've written some very insightful books. But I really want you to walk us through your history. How did you come to being an English professor, getting degrees, and then being involved in comics? How did that come about?
Well, I started reading very young. I was a very voracious reader. Thank God my parents encouraged me that way. I read everything. It's funny that in a time about when I came up, one of the things that you'd say to somebody as an insult would be, why did you go read an encyclopedia? Well, I did read the encyclopedia. I never was afraid to go pick one up or, you know. I was enthralled with reading, and comic books were one of the things that I got involved in. I love Superman, I love Batman. This was like Marvel was really just kind of like starting out, so I really didn't get turned on them until later, but then I found I liked them as well. I liked the idea that they had characters who fought for justice, and as you know, African-Americans, that was always something that's been important to us. It didn't seem to matter who it was, although you didn't see black people like readily or at the forefront at any point in time. The idea they both fought for it. I mean, yes, Superman, who's basically an alien, and depending on when you start reading him, he would be the last of his kind. And Batman was a victim of a very tragic accident, a robbery. His parents both were killed, leaving him alone. And as opposed to just being bitter and perhaps turning to crime himself, he turned against crime and, you know, trained his body and his mind. You know, and for a young nerd like me, that was perfect. You know. And he becomes, you know, the Dark Avenger. So I read comic books a lot, and I had a nice collection as a kid, and it was just one of those additional things that I read. As I started getting into late in high school, earlier in college, I started turning my scholarly pursuits to taking a look and seeing what kind of images were representative of our people, you know, throughout the history of comics, and it's a trail that I've never left. If you talk about popular culture, and that's where comic books make their entry into colleges and universities, is that they're kind of like the stepchild of the arts and humanities. The idea is that you kind of had to bring it in the back door as literature. You couldn't say, I read comics, and like I have a slingshot in your back pocket, like, you know, some of the kids in the old days of comics. You had to come in and, you know, bring it as a scholarly pursuit. That was a natural for me, because we were talking about a lot of other things. You mentioned that Dwayne McDuffie. A lot of people say, well, Milestone was the black comic book. No. It was about diversity. They had people from around the world represented. A lot of people never really appreciate that. And it's for, like many things that involve African Americans, when we talk about race in this country, it's, well, we're special, but we're regular. We're just like everybody else. And some people just can't manage that. Any other time that you bring race, why'd you bring that up? Because it's constant. When is it not going to corrupt? You know, you see our faces, you know, and then you know who we are, and then the stereotype starts. So for me, it was a natural progression, and that's what kind of the trail I've been on for the, about 25 years. The first book I wrote was called Looking for a Face Like Mine, because that's exactly what I was looking for. I didn't see us regularly represented, and certainly not in any positive way, and certainly not as something that you look at as a role model. And it was in exact opposition to what my parents were like. My dad was a police officer. My mother was a domestic and also a nationally renowned pianist, gospel pianist. So I saw people of my color doing tremendous things in my neighborhood, and Martin Luther King was making his name then, but I also looked in terms of science and education. We were represented in a lot of places, but you had to fight to find out. Long before the Internet, I get such pleasure out of saying that, long before the Internet, we were, you know, if you wanted to research stuff, you just had to go and look around. I love science fiction, and I was one of the first awards I ever won in school, junior high school. I won a book award because they said, well, how many books have you read over this period of time? And I just went back into the library and pulled up the titles of the books I had been reading. So that was an easy thing for me to qualify for. But no, reading, it's part of that thing about reading and learning about African-American history. Because I'm old enough to remember it was still Negro History Week. You know,
wow.
We were grateful to get that. And that was a direct outcome of National Brotherhood Week. But no, I just, you know, it's really, and then passing on the words and the stories and the ideas and the images that I've discovered to others has just been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I will be remiss again. You were discussing, you mentioned your book. I wanted to mention that as well for our audience. I believe it's still available at Amazon, Looking for a Face Like Mine and
Absolutely.
Dreaming of a Face Like Ours. That's a collection of essays that you've done as well. You're listening to you, I had a similar experience with comic books as well. I have always been a voracious reader. My parents inculcated that in me to read, just to read. I was over a buddy's. I was over a buddy's house, who was the predecessor to my partner on this program, who we affectionately call Iron Man. That was his, you know, his nickname on the show. And he had a bag full of comics, and I remember to this day. I remember looking at this collection, and at the first book I saw was a Flash comic, and I've always had an interest in speed. I just liked at that time I was young and could run fast, and I just liked speed more so than strength and that kind of thing. So that character became like my favorite character, and then as I got older, I liked Batman for his ability to think. So. Mm-hmm. But my history is very similar with yours as far as just liking to read, and then transitioning to graphic novels was an easy move. It's like, oh wow, this even makes it even more exciting to read.
It certainly does.
I'm kind of dumbfounded in these days with youth cross racially who just don't seem to have that interest. And you know, I'm so into comics and reading. You know, it's on equal footing with a video game or anything else as far as entertainment is for me. Mm-hmm. But trying to convey this to the youth, and specifically black and brown youth, is a very – it's an effort. It's an effort. I wanted to get your impression on a couple of things because there's so many things, that, as I had mentioned at the top of the show, that have really popped off with Marvel's – I guess their insistence on diversity, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. It is a good thing. I don't know if this is how I would have preferred it to be expressed, but with Falcon as Captain America, and now we're also looking at a female Thor, what are your thoughts about this? Do you think this is kind of – is this the future, or is this just a money grab, or is this – you know, what is this? How do you really feel about it?
I was indulging myself today in one of my favorite activities, reorganizing my comic books. My wife loves it because she knows I'm going to be doing something that she can find me very easily.
Right.
And I just, without doing any, like, deep in-depth going through my entire collection, I was able to find a copy of a Marvel book where they have a female Thor. And then, of course, we have, because I knew it, I'd seen that gift of something before, Captain America Sentinel of Liberty, April number 8. And I think that was 2000 and just a second, because I got one right in front of me. And where at the end of the story, the Falcon picks up where Captain America has left, and the date is 1999. And then, of course, we have the wonderful series that was done by Kyle Baker.
Right, The Truth.
And where it was all about the first Captain America was black. You know, I guess that they are afraid that people of the current generation really have little knowledge of that. But I've rarely met somebody who didn't take the time to go back and find books. I mean, that's where I get some of my best discussions, going to a comic book store. And I go, in addition to the new ones, I also go back to the old ones, trying to catch up with stuff that I'm always discovering where something important was done in terms of a positive image. So the one where Thor was a woman was Earth X. That was a Marvel comic, August number 5, and that was 1999. So, and they both came out that same year, both by Marvel, where, you know, you have a female Thor. But then, of course, you also had Storm was Thor for a while, you know, even though it was like a what-if story. A lot of folks have forgotten that. You know, I think that was a really interesting kind of change. The idea, too, is that I often, because I'm on eBay a lot, I see that the statue they made of Storm as Thor is still selling. Not for as much as the other ones, because that's like, it wasn't a major thing. But I'm saying, so you have an African, a woman who's of African and African-American descent, and she was, the Thor. And it made a natural connection because she is controlled. She's called the Storm Witch, the Weather Witch, and Storm, it makes sense because Thor commanded the lightning.
And, folks, this is the bad part about having a comic historian on your show. He just took two of my three main arguments where I would thumb my nose at the crowd. He just took it all away. Thank you, Mr. Foster. Thank you.
I'm so sorry. I don't know
what I was thinking. Well, Daryl, I was going to get you in there. Daryl, go get into it a little bit. Mix it up a little bit. I know you have something beyond that.
but like I said on previous shows, we even talked about this with Mr. Foster at the convention when we were talking. We got into it briefly about the dynamic with Sam and Bucky. We got into it briefly there, where you could see Sam Wilson was actually one of the guys training Bucky as Captain America during their missions. He was Bucky Barnes' confidant. To all the people out there losing their minds over this, all right? To all the people losing their minds over the Thor thing. Look, the Thor thing, I think, is sensationalistic.
Absolutely.
All right? But when it comes to that, if you've been reading Remender's Captain America, he's been building towards this story. This is why I hate when they do this in the press, because it's all now painted under the same stroke. Like, oh, they're just doing this to get ratings. They're just doing this to get eyes here. They don't have a real story. And I'm like trying to tell people, I've been reading the Captain America. He's been building towards this.
There was a black character, when they replaced Captain America. There was actually a black Bucky.
Well, yes, Battlestar. Mm. Battlestar, when they replaced Captain America with the John Walker Captain America, Battlestar wore the Stars and Stripes. He wasn't Captain America, but it was a black man wearing a patriotic uniform. And, oh, by the way, you brought up the truth. Hey, the Bradley family wants to, is online, too, wanted to speak up, because we've had Isaiah Bradley as part of the Young Avengers for the longest.
And the first time that they have, as part of the regular continuity of the character of Captain America, and brought in that horrible, despicable part of our history where the Tuskegee experiment was done, so that people can never, you can never think about Captain America without thinking about how black people were used as guinea pigs in this particular terrible experiment.
Yeah, one of the sad things about that is I have people argue with me all the time. I've watched the Tuskegee Airmen. They never mentioned that, so it wasn't a part of history. And I'm like, put my hand to my forehead like, please, just read a historical book once in a while.
Yeah. And it's one of those shameful episodes of American history. It's one of the hardest struggles I have with my students is that I teach literature and I teach communications, and I say that unless you know history, you can't really address either of these issues. You have to be involved. If it's only that when the flag is waving or somebody's reading from a Bible on their knees like George Washington that you can relate to American history, then you're just cutting yourself off from a lot of stuff. One of the things I do, because I am a geek, is I look at American high school history books and how they treated the Civil War and the role of black people in the Civil War. And for the longest time, we were just like pawns, apparently, because we had no active role establishing our freedom at all. And that's just like, I saved those books because after a certain point in time, someone's going to say it never was done. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but go right ahead.
No, well, what you're saying is you just made me think of something else that brings home the importance of comic books as a medium, because one of my frustrations with dealing with folks that are younger is that when you speak to them, because we have a lot of friends of various ages, favorite from 20 to 70. But with someone who's 20-something, you know, anything that's 5 years beyond them, they don't get it. Trying to impart them the necessity to maybe look at a black-and-white film or look at a film from the 50s or the 60s or, dare I say, a silent film, you can forget it. And I'm trying to explain to them that you're not just looking at an older film. You're looking at a film that showed you how people used to operate. You know,
absolutely.
It's a sociological experiment. When you see a young James Bond slap a woman on the bottom, you know, and the man with the Goldfinger.
Yeah.
You can't do that in a 2014 James Bond. But Sean Connery did that. That was acceptable in 1962.
Well, Sean Connery treated women like trash, you know, but that's part of that type that he was representing. You know, people don't get it. What was it? The original comic book, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? They have a secondary book with the same mythology, and they have this guy who's supposedly James Bond, and he's just an absolute dick. I just read that. Oh my God! First of all, when you have done a lot of reading, that book just comes out so much more to you because they're talking about different books and the characters appear. I thought that was just great, a little frightening, but great.
I mean, they're starting something. Yeah. What you just referenced about black folk being left out of history, they're trying to do that. Trying to do that again in Arizona. I think there's a charter school in Arizona now that they're trying to. There's a book. I can't recollect the name of the book, but they're using a book that states that actually is trying to put out there that black folks benefited from slavery, and that the white slave owners, it's called the 5,000-year leap and the making of America. That's the book that this Arizona charter school is attempting to use to completely rewrite history. So you need to look at these comic books. You need to look at I also collect vintage Ebony magazines going back into the mid and late 40s because you see some things.
Real good social document.
Things that you're going to get in the magazine that you're not going to get in the book, certainly.
Absolutely. A lot of people don't want to believe that Ebony magazine used to have nude pinups in it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Because now everybody's upscale now, but no. I was a young man when it was out. I ain't got nothing else to say, but there we go.
Hell, European newspapers still do it. When I served in Germany, there a couple there. Their national newspapers front page or page two, right there.
Oh, sure.
And I go like, hey, this couldn't pass in New York or America at all.
Who knows?
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. There's a storyline that I'm pretty sure the professor is aware of that haunts me, that I found out a couple of years ago. It was from a EC comic, and it's called Judgment Day. You know about that story?
Classic story.
Just incredible. I mean, the story itself reads like anything that Rod Serling would have done.
Sure.
But the political connotations, and it really goes to show you, we really don't discuss victimization here on the show, but if there's ever a point where people forget that the most simplest of aspirations for black folks was not allowed, and it was considered almost criminal, that is, it's encased in that book. Can you go into that a little bit, if you remember what that thing was about?
Oh, absolutely. It's a story of an astronaut who goes to a planet of robots there, the red robots and the blue robots. They are applying for citizenship in the Federation, Space Federation. And they have him take him around, and we want to show you how well we've done. And how everything is clean and real nice and it's all working. And then the guy says, well, I've only seen the one type of robot. Where the others? Oh, we'll take you over there part of town. So it's segregation. And the robot says, well, no, they like it like this. It's fine like this. And so the astronaut says, until you reach the society where everybody has an equal shot to succeed or fail on their own merits, I'm afraid that we can't offer you citizenship in the league. And as he's leaving, because he's wearing his helmet throughout the entire story, as he leaves, he takes his helmet off, and the last scene, the last panel of the comic, you see that he's a black man. He's African-American. And I just got, thank God, I found some research on that, because I collect the comic book magazines. I write about comics all the time. And Bill Gaines was saying that the censor fought him tooth and nail about, you can't have him as a black guy, And
wow.
Bill Gates says, you know what, I'm going to do it anyway. Because they fought for months. No, you got to change that,
Does he have to sweat as much? Why is he sweating so much?
But it was like, and then, of course, Star Trek. Was it Deep Space Nine?
Yes.
They did a takeoff where all the characters on the show were in 1950s office writing a scientific magazine, and the black guy, Avery Brooks,
wanted to do a story where black people were astronauts, and they were, like, scoffing with him and giving him a hard way to go, and he was submitting the story. Direct, and you had to feel the direct line between that and Judgment Day.
Yeah, and
probably one of their best episodes.
And for folks out there, if you want to find out more about Judgment Day, Brian Cronin at Comics Should Be Good at Comic Book Resources, one of his comic book legends revealed goes deeper into it. And you could just see how trepidatious everybody was to the story. We enjoyed it. The writer says they enjoyed it all up until the last page, and then all of a sudden, we can't print this. What do you mean we can't print this? So, Comic Book Legends Revealed over at Comics Should Be Good, just look, or go to Google and look up Judgment Day. And you'll find a lot of interesting viewpoints on it.
And going back,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Professor.
I was going to say just one more thing to the point. It was that I also have copies of the letters that they received at DC Comics when the story appeared, and people were going off. And believe me, the N-word was used a lot. You know,
wow.
I was raised around these people. Why did you stop writing about them? You're going to make it bad for everybody. But it's important to have that view of history. My new book actually talks about that.
And a great counterpoint to that is a commercial that the Air Force has been running featuring one of the first black astronauts in space and talking
Absolutely.
About how being in the Air Force has opened up doors for him. And you know what? I couldn't help but think back to this story.
Let's bring in the captain.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Captain's been very quiet. Captain Kirk, you're needed on the bridge again.
I have one question. All right, one question, all right? And it goes off on a tangent, but it's tangentially related to our topics. Now, as a professor, because that's what you are, how do you feel about some of these universities and other professors teaching about, or should I say, courses on like Nas, Jay-Z, and other select individuals? I just wanted to know your opinion on that.
So the whole rap culture.
Yes.
And hip-hop culture. Not a surprise. Not a surprise at all. African-American culture is very accessible. I think that's the word that George Carlin used. He said about it, is that it's easy for people to appropriate. And the idea that they had classes on rock and roll. They had classes on R&B. They had classes on gospel music. They surely would have to have them on hip-hop because that was the way all that stuff came from. If you're teaching classes on African dance and African-American popular dance, then, you know, the idea is that it's a very easy, accessible culture. People used to say it wasn't nothing before, you know. What was the term? Ebonics. That when there was a big stir in the media about how dare you teach Ebonics, you should be teaching these kids proper English. But Ebonics has rules of grammar as well. And here's the surprise note. The state of California had been teaching Ebonics as a bridge to regular English for years, you know, and they had just done it quietly. And then this thing came out, oh, no, we can't have this. You know what? I understand that some people are gatekeepers. You know, I understand some people are just elitist and somehow feel that nothing has value unless it's something that relates to their experience. But no, that's not how the world rolls. What year is it again? 2000 and what? Okay, not 19 and something, you know. Because I don't see you going out to your barn instead of your garage and hooking up the buggy. Come on, you put it in the car. Have an appreciation that if we are lucky, we advance. And not all Americans are going to move the same way. It's something, and that seems outrageously obvious. But the research I do talking about when the first black characters as positive influence or just as regular characters started appearing, there's no coincidence that coincides with the desegregation of the military, desegregation of the civil rights, I mean, not the civil rights, the civil service system, you know, by Harry Truman back in the 40s. And then you move it into the early 50s and when everybody's coming back home and the GI Bill is cooking and, you know, and all that stuff that people dealt with, you know, because I did an exhibit on African-Americans serving in World War II, and they had an enemy on two fronts. They had the enemy that was declared enemy and they had racism. And when that started breaking down, there were people who could not handle it. And even if they had no outward sign of power or whatsoever, they had the illusion of power, and somehow this was being challenged. Just like you said, everything had to be challenged right down the line. If you said I'm gonna go to college, there had to be somebody there to knock you down or say you're not gonna get in or make sure you didn't get in, because that was just like you moving on. You know, we talked earlier about being in love with literature. Literacy was, I mean, if they found that you could read, then that was a death sentence. That's how powerful they realized that was. So some people just don't want to make the change, but it's an obvious change. I mean, you know, there's no way in the world that these things, you can't have rap artists and hip-hop artists making major influential changes throughout our culture without somebody being against it, and there's no, but also somebody promoting it.
One quick thing I just want to shout out to our audience. Once again,
okay.
Folks, we're conversing with Professor Bill Foster. I'm pretty sure you've heard your fair share of Black Goliath connections to yourself, sir. When I first heard your name, I walked away and said, wait a minute, Bill Foster, that's Black Goliath. So, I mean, even that is kind of a cool thing for you to be coincidentally a comic book historian, and there's a character that's, you know, very prominent in the 70s, Black Goliath. So,
I call
and
it
actually,
poetic justice, my brother.
Yeah. And I tell you something, again, I'm kind of forgetting to go into to let the audience know what's happening. No musical breaks. The conversation is too good, folks. We'll get to that later. No musical breaks. Again, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio with Professor Bill Foster, author of Looking for a Face Like Mine, Pick It Up, Dreaming of a Face Like Ours, Pick Those Books Up.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you, sir, where do you think we're going? I mean, we saw the creation of Milestone Media 20-some-odd years
sure.
ago, and in a way it still exists, but not the way I would have liked it to exist. I would have liked it to be where Image is today, personally. Maybe it could have been. But, you know, now it seems like I know the captain feels the way, and perhaps even Daryl, I feel there's such a thing as neo-minstrelsy. We're going backwards in some ways. I'm thinking about some of the TV shows post-civil rights, you know, whether it's Julia or Bill Cosby's second show after I Spy. I just picked up the first two seasons on DVD, the Bill Cosby mm-hmm. show where he was Chet Kincaid. There were quite a few programs that I don't know if people Class 222, Room 222.
Oh yeah.
With who was the one I haven't had a crush on? That girl. Oh, she was bad. She was in Blackula also.
And that killed.
You know what I'm talking about?
I'm just kidding. Yes, I do.
You know, I'm probably dating myself a little bit, but she's also in the thing that Sidney Poitier did, the TV version of it.
In the Heat of the Night? And Still in the Night? That one?
No, In the Heat,
in
of, the
heat
night.
Of the Night.
I can't remember the actress's name. Anyway, there was quite a few examples.
Diane Carroll?
No. She's a good one, too, but no. I'm trying to get her on the show as well, actually. Before what we see now, 40 years ago, it seems like even the representation and presentation was a bit tighter than what we see now. So I'm very dependent on comic books in some ways to convey a certain thing. Do you
sure.
think things have improved? I mean, or I don't know if we're going backwards, but maybe we're standing still. I mean, some would say that having a Falcon as Captain America is moving on or upward. I don't necessarily think so, but what are your thoughts about where we are now as far as
sure enough.
Racial representation in comic books?
Two words for you. Dave Chappelle.
Okay.
Dave Chappelle turns down $50 million and people think he's crazy, but Dave Chappelle explains on TV, he said, the hardest thing of me involved in media images and the creator of media images, and that covers all fields, is at what point are you truly representing what you got into the business for, or you paying back the folks who write your paycheck. And the people who pay you write your paycheck for black people occasionally slip into minstrel kind of images because they think that's funny. He said the turning point for him was when they wanted him to wear a dress for a skit, and he wouldn't do it. And they had a guy come by, come on, Dave, just put the dress on, you know. And he said, you know what? I'm not going to go out of here like a clown. I'm not. Flip Wilson had the same thing. He had a big fight on the set with the audience there with Dick, Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor wanted to curse and grab his, he pulled his dick out on the rehearsal and carried on. And he's like, hey, man, you got to go. That's not what I'm doing here. You know, they represented two different points. Whenever I go to, whenever we have a quote unquote, a black panel, y'all know what I'm saying, at a comic book convention.
Right. Right.
Somebody invariably from the audience stands up and said, you guys all should get together and just write a big anthology. But stop and think about the different points of view that we all represent. Some people represent religious points of view. Some write specifically for children. Some write for the adult point of view. There's no way in the world that that's all going to come together in one book, that somehow we should be just one monolithic view of what black people are. And every black person has their own view of who we are. That's what I see now. We have more images now of black people than we've ever had. There was a question that came out to black comic book creators a while back, and somebody said, do you think there's enough black images now? I said, as opposed to when we didn't have any. Because every day, more black creators and a lot more sisters are putting their input in as well. So we're going to always – that's what America is. It's all points of view represented at once. And it seems like the pendulum should be swinging one way, but that's only because people are looking at that particular way. It swings back and forth. Are we a country that believes that sex is something that should only be handled personally and privately, you know, or do we think that it's a natural phenomenon? Why are you trying not to tell people about it? When the point of it is that we've got both those points of view, and we've never been a one point of view. Oh, pornography is going to kill America. Well, I don't know. I've seen the other side. You know, I grew up in a very religious family where we never talked about sex, you know, and that didn't lead to necessarily good things either. So I think we're moving, and there's always resistance. There are people who don't like black people don't like hip hop or rap. Oh, this is horrible. This is looking at this talking about killing people and carrying guns and carrying. And then you have a rap artist say, wait a minute, I'm just talking about what I see around me, not what you saw. And I think that for that period of time you talked about, the 60s and 70s, is that we were closer to the civil rights movement as it was coming around. Now you have generations who have no idea who Martin Luther King is except one day a year, and they think all he did was march. You know, you see a picture of him, he's in the street, linking arms with somebody, singing a gospel song, and they think that's all what the civil rights movement was about. They don't know about SNCC. They don't know about, you know, the idea that, yeah, young people were saying, well, enough of, we shall overcome. We want some black power. That was a major struggle in the black community. You know, when I was a young man just starting in business and I traveled around, I'd be sitting by myself, and more than one time an older black person would come by and sit next to me and tell me about their experience because they didn't want it to be devalued by people who didn't understand what they went through. I never had anybody call me a nigger, you know, and told me to get off the bus, ever. So I had to go back and learn about that particular experience. My parents never talked about that, and they surely came from the South. So we have to have an appreciation that everybody's working on the struggle. I teach at a community college, which means, I'm sorry, am I going too far on this, gentlemen?
No, go ahead. I'm taking down notes.
Okay. I teach at a community college, because I get black people of every generation there. And it's always a kind of a mix. You have people who survived the 60s where if you had campus police, they couldn't look at a campus police officer in his uniform and not think about the guys in the neighborhood who tried to devalue them and steal their dignity every day. So that was a major conflict. If something came up with the police, they were ready to, you know, we got to march, we got to get on the news, you know. And you got somebody like me and say, wait a minute, we have, at least on my campus, we have public safety officers who are willing to work with us to make this better for everybody. You're going to throw away that opportunity because you have an image in your head about what they used to be, okay? And I grew up in Philadelphia where I could not go home from school and make my way from the airport to my house without seeing cops, Ralston Brothers. I couldn't. And it wasn't that far of a way to go. And that was like, if I had to somehow transcend that experience. But I don't deny that original experience still exists. Philadelphia was horrid. And we had, like, the police chief become the mayor. That was a nightmare to be had because he was just a rabbit racist. And how he got elected was he scared older black people into thinking that these young kids are crazy. I'm going to take care of this. There's going to be law and order. There's not going to be humanity. There's not going to be human rights. There's not going to be human, you know, dignity. But there'll be law and order. We're going to keep it in control. And that's always been said about people who we thought were different from us, even for different generations. So when I see people older than me willing to work with me, hey, dude, I'm fine. You know, it's hard to find people older than me now. But I just have an appreciation that we've had different experiences. We've got the rural experience. We've got the suburban. Yeah, we got black people in suburbia. But we don't have all suburban towns coming, because I have students tell me, I've had a student tell me, said, you're not only the first black professor I've ever had, you're the first black person I've ever met.
Wow.
And black people were like, oh, wait a minute, how is that possible? And that's the same thing I felt when I was in Philadelphia. I grew up in the black neighborhood. I didn't mean I stayed there, but I thought Philadelphia had more black folks than white folks, because that's what I saw. You know, we got work to do, and the approaches we use for them are going to all be different. And I think that's appropriate, too. I'm not mad at nobody because their approach is different than mine. I'm just like, okay. Try that out, see how it feels, because everybody has to go through that. We had to go through a part where there was tokenism, where you had one black person who had to represent every black person in America. Comic books was particular for that, okay? You had one black superhero who had to be the hero, who had to be the clown, he had to be the villain. That was just bad. You know, and the example I'm thinking of is Luke Cage. Please look at some of those earlier issues who his opponents were.
Quite painful.
Other dimensions, he's fighting a big black woman called Black Mariah. Oh, come on! You know. Blade because he gets no razors and stuff. Oh, man, come on. Razors? What the hell is that?
Isn't it interesting, even with him, they've made some a great deal of capitulation with that character or concessions with him, because now he's getting his own show courtesy of Netflix. So I'm interested to see how that will work out. But, you know, we forget that Luke Cage comes about. Well, first of all, Luke Cage somehow influences Nick Cage, formerly Nick Coppola, which is, he, as a white Italian kid, he liked Luke Cage so much that he chose his name as his own surname for entertainment purposes. But before you had a Luke Cage, you still had a Black Panther and a Falcon, who were pretty, you know, I guess, if you're going to use an analog, someone like Sidney Poitier would probably represent Black Panther. Talk about the casting on that. You talk about old school. Sometimes I think about that old school casting. You'd be a perfect Black Panther. I mean, he's like 90 now, but I'm just thinking, you know, it would be cool if sometimes they do that. When you talk about golden age actors, who could play, I don't know, someone like who was married to I can't remember his name now. I should know. A great actor, blackballed by Hollywood. I'm losing my memory. Anyway, what I really wanted to get into is, okay, so we see that comic books are not exactly moving the way we want to, or they're moving in some kind of direction. But how do we convey the medium toward the youth? I mean, I was shocked to see, during the second annual Black Comic Con, to see so many black folks there, black youth with their parents. Not unlike the Comic Con that's in New York, the large one.
Absolutely.
Why is it difficult? I mean, we need to pass this on so we can expand. I mean, these are intellectual properties that are worth billions. Black folks need to be about that even on a financial level, let alone culturally. How do you think, you know, how do we move past the love around, so to speak?
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. Who created Madea? Tyler Perry.
Oh, Jesus.
Tyler Perry was told unequivocally by both black and white people, first of all, you can't do plays because black people will not come out to see plays about black people. Secondly, you damn sure can't do movies because black people won't go to movies to see black people. And then, of course, it was always the inverse was always implied, well, white people won't go either, okay? But the idea was Tyler Perry didn't hear that. He said, you know what, I bet you're wrong. I'm betting my life, because he was like living out of a car just before he hit big. A lot of folks don't want to hear that he was homeless, you know, because somebody just figured he went to the magic black place someplace and suddenly he figured out how to do it. But the same thing happens for black people in comics. The number of black creators has increased exponentially since the 90s, and that's a direct result of the explosion of personal computers and the Internet. Because once we could get out there and you create your product and you could sell it yourself, because distribution has always been our problem. Milestone was one of the few companies that beat that, because they said, listen, we will get a partnership with DC through our books. Bang! And the thing that black people have been struggling in comic books for like 20 years suddenly went away. And they were totally open about involving other people about it, but of course there were folks who like didn't want to hear that. It was always about how you're going to be like the man. You can't be black if you're working with working for them. Okay, is that what you think? And when I met Dwayne McDuffie, he was like, He said he was surprised. He said, hey, we never said anything bad about anybody, man. We tell you, come on and join the party. But, you know, everybody had their own thing, just like I said before. So the idea is that when you go to a show and you see people turn out, it belies the idea that black people don't want to see black people and stuff. Now, I have a friend who says, if we had the same success as Japanese manga, black comics would, like, be 10 times in the places where they're not right now. Because how many kids you know don't know about manga or anime?
Yeah, okay? Yeah, you're right.
And that's what they're emulating.
Well, I tell you something. You know, you made me think about this. When you mentioned Tyler Perry, of course, I kind of, you know, I kind of zone out because I'm not a fan of him. I'm more of a Spike Lee guy. But he does serve as an example. Because actually, over the last couple of years, I've learned not to be as critical of Tyler Perry, because the black community, we're not a monolith.
No,
and we need that's what's hurting us. If anything, it's always this whole thing about we need to get together, the whole tribalism kind of thing, brother,
sure.
brother, and I've been very selective of who's my brother, who's my sister. I'm not aligning myself with Shaquan and Trey Keisha, that whole crew, because there's parts of hip hop I'm uncomfortable with. There's parts of black culture that are regressive. But at the same time, if we were viewed how we are, where we have all these different things going on, Daryl and myself and the captain, we're going to go to Afropunk next month, where up to 50,000 people at Commodore Barry Park, mostly people of color, are listening to this whole avant-garde black rock punk music thing. And it's written about in New York Times. And I'm like, wait a minute, you have 50,000 people who debunk the stereotype, and yet it's treated as if it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So we need to maybe embrace the fact that we have a lot of things going on. So really, if we could use the comic book medium from a black perspective, the way that Tyler Perry is used church-going black females for his thing, we could be equally as successful.
Well,
no question.
On that same point, the whole point behind the comic shop and Afro Nerd and stuff like that is we're talking to everybody, but we want to get it into our Afro-American listeners, black people across the world, whoever picks up to listen to us. You know what? You don't need to stick to the stereotype. You don't need to stick to the prejudice. You don't need to stick to the prejudging. You got a brain. Use it. All the information. The best thing about this, even though I rail against social media and all of that, the best thing about this age right now is anything you want to find out about, you can. And all you need is that desire to go and take a look and look back. Go to take a look and find out in the news. Don't just take what the media feeds you. Don't just take what Joe Schmo on the street says as fact. Use your head. Use your brain. God gave it to you for a reason. Or whoever's up there gave it to you for a reason. You know what? Use it. You got that in your head. Use it.
And you know the new danger is that social media has its same kind of bullet heads as well as any place else. Somebody will see something on Facebook and say, oh, this must be true because it's on Facebook. Cut it out. You know, I'm telling my students that all the time. I said, when I see some stuff and somebody wants me to rally behind them when I have got minimal facts, that would make – why don't I just say bah, because that would just make me a sheep.
What's the question from
– you just can't do a cursory investigation. You have to do a serious investigation, you know. Believe in something, you know, stand for something, you know, or fall for anything, you know.
We have a question from the chat room, one of our stalwart listeners, Q-Storm. He says, I would challenge the professor and ask him his opinion that, yes, black folks will come out to see programs with black folk in them, but it always seems to be the minstrel products. They won't come out for Fruitvale Station. What about his question or his statement?
Well, this is interesting because this is personal and political, yeah? Because I have people, and I'm 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
I've had people, like, just jump back when they see me. And you know what? I can't make you feel more comfortable around me. You got to work on that on your own. I am who I am. and that's always been the way. There are people who would always go to something that makes them feel more comfortable. Bill Cosby succeeded because he was funny, but also because he was non-threatening. The only other time people had seen black people was on the news getting arrested. Because if you take a look at I have a personal thing about crime shows that they always start off with a woman being killed. And that doesn't give me much faith in how women are going to be treated in our society. That's how you start out every show. Yeah, I got it, it's television. But it reflects, but it also has, I think, the responsibility to project. It doesn't always have to be, because just take a look one night, if you don't watch TV on a regular basis, and watch how many shows start off with a woman being killed, and something violent. You know, and that's a plot device, and that's just frightening. And you have to think about that was the same thing that was done to us. The only time you saw black people when they were trying to be, they were being funny or being kicked by white people, or you know, or not around or serving white people or dancing or singing, because those were the only ways people allowed us into entertainment, and then later on sports, which we absolutely excelled at. You know, but stop and think about it. If you're watching the Olympics and you see a Chinese team and you see a black team, we automatically, everybody automatically thinks the black team is going to win. But that doesn't mean that the Chinese haven't been watching who's been winning for the last 50 years, changed their training program, so they're doing the same thing we're doing. It's accessible. If you're going to expose something out there and say, this is what we do and this is what we're proud of, you have to appreciate that some people are going to appropriate it. That's exactly how that goes. I'm not mad at anybody like that. But I do have – Tyler Perry gets a big rap for doing situation comedies. But what succeeds on TV? His revenue, once he succeeded, he can do anything he wants. If you ever watch any of his films, one of the things that he promotes, family values, religion, men and women being together, talking to each other, not hitting each other, okay? He pushes on those both buttons every time. I've never heard anybody congratulate him for that. It's not always about being funny because, hey, as I said, my mother worked as a domestic in, you know, white people's houses, and black people sent slavery. As soon as the door shut when the slave master went out, we were making fun of them. We were doing imitations of them. What makes you think they wasn't doing the same thing for us? You know, can you dish out and take at the same time? But we have done, because we talked about a lot of stuff. We talked about black astronauts, black literature, which is just amazing, and I'm still discovering stuff. I'm going to be teaching my course on that this semester. I can't wait. I've been saving stuff for a while. Books that have plays, poems. My students, I don't think, would know who some of these people are, but I always include them in my class. Maya Angelou, Langston Hughes. I even go to the beat poets of the 60s and 70s because before he became Imam Baraka, you know, he was Leroy Jones. And
Leroy Jones,
right.
Real,
he was doing some major pithy stuff, and I don't ever want that to be lost. You know, some people just want to forget that and move on to something new. You know, well, we not necessarily be haiku, but we did have something important to say about our struggle.
And I think the Dutchman released recently?
Oh yeah.
His movie / play. The gentleman that played it? Because in the movie, the gentleman that played the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he played in the film.
I have the film
on DVD.
Yeah. He did.
Professor, we got about less than 2 minutes remaining. We're going to have to invite.
Oh man, that went quickly.
I know. We're going to invite you back because we have another segment. But I want to ask you one quick thing.
Sure.
We definitely got to get you back. What about, you know, having our own imprint? You know, we talked about Milestone Media. Mm-hmm. How many, if we're going to, like, say, okay, we need to have X amount of black folks reading comic books. Because
sure.
I see black, when I go to these comic book conventions and even just comic book stores, there's an awful lot of black young bespectacled men in there as young
sure.
women. I mean, but it appears that in order for a comic book to survive, we're not talking about 1940 numbers because the books are selling in millions back then. But it seems
sure.
as if for a comic book to survive, you might have 10,000 sales, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 sales.
Mm-hmm.
Is it unreasonable to believe that there are at least that many black comic book collecting folk that could routinely support black comic books, independent or otherwise?
That the independent scene is amazing. And this is what people need to do, is that a buddy of mine who in Chicago, he went to, every time they had a black expo, he got a booth. And he was selling comic books, and he said he sold out every time. He found the market. If I go to libraries and talk to young kids, I bring my exhibit to colleges. I bring it to high schools. I bring it to elementary schools. I have a different setup for each kid so that they can understand the level that I'm talking to them about it. And they are just stunned. And I take them to both white, black and white schools, because if we think just black kids can just see this, the major population, because let's get on the real. Nothing will make a major change here until people see that we are doing something and that it's not going to be scary. Because we were cutting jokes about that at the Black Comic Book Convention in Philadelphia.
We're going to see each, we're going to see each other
saying,
again.
When you say, cause when you say black comics, white people automatically say, well, can we come? Yeah, we can come to you. You can come to us.
Well, let me tell you something. A colleague, a white colleague, told me when I told her that I had gone to this thing, well, you know, I would love that, but can I? Am I allowed to come? See, that's a very freaky thing. So
yeah.
I think what we need to do, and this is, and I'm all about finance also. I don't like leaving money on the table. My belief
sure.
is that you see these intellectual properties making billions, not millions, billions. And black folks, if we can get away, we're not just minstrel, because the minstrel industry makes a hell of a lot of money. That faction, a degrading image for whatever reason, makes
sure.
money. It's not hard to believe that we need to commodify this segment of black culture. You know, black pop culture, Afro nerdism, whatever you want to call it, that's our own brand, has
sure.
to be, it's time to make some money off of this. But I think many of us are trained to go to the Marvel booth, and I love Marvel too, trained to go to Marvel, trained to go to DC, and we bypass all these independent black folks that we put us all together and say, okay, this is the black thing. It would leave the money on the table, literally. Literally.
I always make it an opportunity to go around, because I love New York Comic Con. May I bite my tongue for saying that out loud.
I love it too. I love it too.
And I find the black people who sell books, and I buy their books every time, because that'll encourage them to come back. And people see that we're not going to be, you know, turned away. It makes a difference in how we are perceived. I'm sorry, I know we are cutting that low down time.
I see white people buying black swag too.
Oh, sure.
There's a gentleman. What's he? Black Action Tees. Black Action Tees. And he had a shirt. I bought two.
One of my buddies. I love his stuff.
I bought two of the same shirts. I couldn't. I loved it. It was the show. I mean, the shirt that had the old 1960s Batman TV insignia, but instead it says Panther instead of Batman. You know what I mean?
Yep.
How white people are in line buying that shirt? So we're leaving money, and we're selling our shows short. We can do more than the minstrel stuff. Let's start selling some of these black comic books and black paraphernalia. You know, that's all. Professor,
if you believe in your product, you can't afford to be by yourself. And the idea that sometimes you will be by yourself the first year, but maybe the second year you will not.
No, I should say that gentleman's pretty bad, because they were at his booth. I was at his booth. I was me, but then I was just all these white people behind me buying this shirt. So it's time, sir. Listen, absolute pleasure. We'll definitely bring you back.
Gentlemen,
maybe
have a pleasure for me.
We'll have a tie-in with you for the Black Comic Con. We'll work it out. I'll keep in touch with you behind the scenes. Pleasure, sir.
Take care, gentlemen.
Thank you for coming.
All right, enjoy,
thank you,
sir.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that was Professor Bill Foster, William H. Foster, from Naugatuck Community College, Valley Community College in Waterbury, Connecticut. You know what, gentlemen, I don't know how long if you can stick around, Daryl, because I just wanted to I didn't really want to break like that. So I think we're just going to just keep it forward. Do you want to stick around still?
Let's keep
on going.
Let's
just move on. Captain, are you okay with that?
Why wouldn't I be?
Okay.
That was part of the thing.
You know, normally we would break. Normally we would break and go into Afro Nerd Radio. Whatever. But we'll talk about a couple of things for the next 50 something minutes. But there's some things that we didn't really get into that we should get into. I want to. Let's go to a musical break first. And when we get back, what I want to do is I want to talk about Extant. I want to talk about San Diego, and also not forgetting Q-Storm. Q-Storm has some concerns about his son attending Comic-Con, like just what to do. So I want Daryl.
Survival
all of us
guide
have been
time,
there.
Huh? Yeah.
Survival. Okay. Listen, all of us can talk about this intimately. The Catholics can talk about it from an administrative level, working the grounds on in this thing. I've been there. Daryl's certainly been there. And I can tell you, my first New York Comic Con, my head was spinning. I mean, I literally was like, I mean, I just couldn't. I was, if you want to talk about overload, sensory overload, I didn't know what to do. So he's going to have to get some instruction. So we do what we do. Okay, up to you know what? Now I can't get to a musical break. All right, we'll get to a musical break in a moment. Let's just move forward. Let's talk about Extant. Let's talk about Extant. I was trying to get a musical break, but forget about that. Extant. I finally saw the first episode. This is the Halle Berry, Steven Spielberg vehicle, CBS. Let's go to the captain. We haven't heard from the captain in a minute. Captain, what are your thoughts about Halle Berry's foray into TV, Extant?
Well, I think this particular show so far, what I've seen two episodes, and my rule of thumb is you have to give these shows three episodes. After you watch them, the three episodes, you can make a decision. Is it really good? Is it a bomb? Or is it just all right? Keep in mind, this is Spielberg has his hands in it. Spielberg also has had some TV, fiascos, debacles. It just weren't good, but because it's Spielberg, you tune in. So that being said, at this given point, this show, two episodes in, is all right. It's something there to hold you. It's all right. See what's going on with it and everything else. I'll let somebody else chop up the actual details, what's going on in the show and everything else, but this, overall, the show just thus far is just all right at this given point. We'll see what happens when I view the third episode. Back over to Seraph on Earth.
Yeah, I'll say something briefly on it. Again, I just saw the first episode, actually right before we went on air. I have yet to see The Strain. I was trying to see The Strain. I know The Strain is good, but I have a thing about horror. Like, I was looking at it, I saw the first, 3 minutes. Okay, I got to be a certain mindset to even deal with The Strain. I see where this is going.
You have a weak stomach, Afro-Nerd. You have a weak stomach.
It's not a weak stomach, but it's just I just got to be able to deal with what's going to happen. I saw the first 3 minutes of The Strain where they're on the airplane and something's going on underneath. I said, okay, this is not going to be good. So I paused. I know how Guillermo gets down. I said, After this broadcast, I will check out The Strain. I check out Penny Dreadful. I love Penny Dreadful, but there's some moments where I got to stop. I got to pause. Okay, wait a minute. There's some things with my sensibilities, whatever. Back to Extant. I'll say this much. After seeing only one episode, I was in it. It's definitely in my lane. The thing about Spielberg that people have critiqued him for in recent years is that sometimes he's a little too he kowtows to childhood sensibilities a little too much. Like you could tell, like AI could have been a great film, but it was so much into just a kind of a child. It was like a children's thing. He mixes sci-fi with childlike sensibilities. Sometimes that doesn't work. He can stay in E.T. mold. Listen, when I saw E.T., I was a kid. I literally was a kid, so I could get into E.T. But I don't want to see E.T. as an adult. Or if you're going to do it where it attracts the adult in me, not the child in me. So anyway, so far, I see that he has a kid in there, a robot kid. But it is definitely movie-esque. I mean, when you look at this thing, like, wow, this is like a really – I guess you wouldn't expect anything less from a Spielberg production, but it doesn't have that TV feel. It really does seem like something could have been put out there on a world national theatrical release, not on a CBS show. But I guess that's because of what Halle Berry brings. I mean, she brings that Oscar beauty name recognition. So you can't have someone – and thankfully for her – to come from a movie experience that's doing something kind of like, you can't bring her into James Evans' apartment and Good Times. It's got to be something real. So far, so good. I think Karen Manheim the heavyset actress. We've seen her for years. So they have, you know, actors of a certain skill set. I don't dislike it. I gotta see more to see where this is going. So far, so good. I give it moderate. So I don't know where they're going with this. It is still very, very early. I can't say if it stinks or not. So far, the expense of the production has me in it. But then I said that about Almost Human also. So I may not know what I'm talking about. Daryl, your thoughts on Extant?
My thoughts is I sent you guys an email during the week. And mainly because I saw the first episode, and then I saw the second episode today. And I made a comment that everybody was going crazy over a black Captain America and a female Thor. Hey, why doesn't somebody drive a truck full of money up to Sonya Latham's door and offer her something like Miranda Mercury or Martha Washington so I could get a black actress in an action-starring role without it being blaxploitation. All right? That's what I said. Right out there, right, Frank? You're allowed to make your own comments on this. I am loving this. Not for the other actors, but it forces Halle Berry out of her safe zone. Okay? And she has, so far, done a decent job. I'm on the lines with the captain. I'm going to give this time to grow. She has done a decent job of trying to get passionate responses out of the rest of the actors around her. But you could tell, all right, Cameron Manheim aside, that some of these, they're in it for the paycheck. They don't love this. You know, the one thing, folks, about sci-fi is with the material, you could tell on air, from the performances, like a good Broadway play and a bad Broadway play, well, to us, we are all sci-fi geeks here. We could tell when actors are into the script or not. Okay? Helix, to use it as an aside, Helix, you could tell all of those actors are into it. All right? We're going to just give balls to the wall performances. The Strain, I know the captain saw it, you know. The middle part of the first episode of The Strain, oh, my God, that was a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, be careful. No, I didn't see it yet. Be
careful. All right? I'm not even revealing what happens in the middle part of it, you know, but you could feel the tension. You could feel the passion being shown. That is my problem with Extant, all right? With the material being brought forth, and again, I'm not going to reveal too much to the audience. I want you guys to check it out. All right, I love that a black female lead is there. I love that for science fiction. We would have had this 25 years ago. But the problem is with this, you need everybody around to be in it, 100%. Be in it. When the best actor of this, including Halle Berry, who's been characterized more here than she was ever in any of the X-Men movies, all right, and it's only been two episodes, you know, when the best actor here is the kid at emoting, we may have a problem down the line. I'll say
you know
it like
what?
That.
I just realized something. It just clicked to me. A couple of things. First, thank you, Keystone, for the correct spelling. Cameron Manheim. I say Karen. Cameron Manheim. I do remember from the practice, and also I'm wondering if she's going to be doing double duty. I guess it's all CBS. You know, she's also in what's she called? She plays a great villain, Daryl, in the one. You know,
the Good Wife.
The sci-fi thing with the all-seeing computer on CBS.
Oh, Person of Interest.
Person of Interest. She's great in that. But you're right. I'm not so sure. I don't, you know, it's too, I'm being respectful in the sense that it's early, but you know, I don't know if their interest is really there. Like you said, that is the little thing where you feel like, you know, this is kind of, they're kind of doing this. And that kid, I remember him now. That kid is from the thing with Bruce Willis from great sci-fi thing, Kathy. We saw that little kid with the powers. You saw that kid with Bruce Willis.
Oh, you mean Looper.
Looper. He was a little boy in Looper.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good. I said he was impressive then. He's gonna be. He's gonna be. That kid is. That kid has got the chops.
He's going to be the next Jordan, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. A kid that grows up and you grow with him in the cinema and on TV. You could see it in this kid.
I thought that he was incredible in Looper as, what, 3 or 4 or whatever? So he's just – I don't have to worry about him. It's Hallie and everybody else. That's what's so funny. The kid's got it.
But
he knows what to do.
But, again, to us, the subject matter, if they could get 80% of this right, it'd be more groundbreaking than anything that CBS has put on the air in 25 years. And I appreciate the risk they do with Under the Dome. They tried with Intelligence, Person of Interest, you know, that it has its up and downs, but it's generally well acted. But this subject matter, you know Middle America is going nuts over this. And if they stumble, it'll be off the air in six or seven episodes.
Well, the only thing about that, when you bring up Middle America, the only thing, and I have no problems with interracial or cross-racial things, because they're making this very much a future where everybody's interacting on an equal level. So I appreciate that. But there does appear to be a meme when you see Shonda Rhimes' universe, and you have the black female heroine. And then she has to have a white mate. I mean, you know, I think you need to see that. I support that, but I don't support it wholesale. I think you need to see that, and you need to see everybody else. You need to see intact monoracial families as well as cross-racial families. But in order for I'm not comfortable with in order for you to, it's almost like how they do this in comic book style. In order for you to understand a black character, he's got to have a white connection, a white spouse or something. This Fantastic Four thing, that's how that's going to work. You know,
what,
I want
to talk about Chronicle 2? What?
If you really want to dig deep, Halle Berry, number one, she can't have children. Two, they have a robot, you understand? And what does Halle Berry do really well throughout her career? She plays a crazy chick extremely well. So you can really dig into that from the black perspective if you really wanted
and
to. You know?
And sexualizing her also. Like every time she's getting – it's first episode, you're already naked in the shower. You're not with me. You're with that dude.
Mm-hmm.
I was in my head, though. I was like, come on, Hallie. You know, come on.
You can really dig in.
Knock it off. Let the Afro nerd take over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but if no one else in the cast is an Afro nerd, who's there to check
I'll break the fourth wall, Captain. Go ahead.
That's all I'm saying. If no one else there is an Afro nerd, who is there to check him? It's the Michael Bay disease with the Transformers movie. If no one else in the room is a true Transformers fan, who's going to check him? Who's going to say, whoa, why are we having this? Just check. We could do this like this. If there's no one in the room that's an Afro nerd or no one in the room is a decent female, you know, we're going to end up having the women in refrigerators stereotype or the broke black woman syndrome, referring to the shower scene, or, you know, or the inappropriate woman dressed in a social setting syndrome, the end of episode one. You know, if there's no one in the room to check them, or does this make sense in this given scene, you know, with the tone we're setting on the thing? And just force them to think about it before they put it on screen.
You know something else, too. When there is a black male involved, because there is a black male involved, but he's always involved in a way where he's neutered. Like, this guy is some kind of ghost. The husband is already dead and gone, or maybe he's an alien. They got it. They always it works a little too comfortable, too conveniently,
yep,
all the time, where there's a
yep
black female lead. And if there is going to be a black male, then make sure that black male is gay or dead or unavailable. There's no way he's going to be able to tap that buttocks.
Or robot Michael Ealy syndrome. Yes. Yes.
They make sure the big penis cannot get to the vagina.
There you go.
That's the one thing. That, even with the Michael Ealy thing, I think I even tweeted him about that. I said, "Yo, I mean, you know, all right." They made that little joke about his equipment. Yuck, 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 yuck. But a black man with equipment is going to use it, robot or not. So that's the point. I mean, there's always – you get into the psychic and psychological interplay with how this media stuff works. We are still coming up – heck,
sure.
When the professor was on and we talked about Judgment Day, that article – I mean, that short story in EC, the community didn't even want a black man to be portrayed as an astronaut. So there is a thing about cock-blocking you, for the lack of a better word. That is what goes on cinematically and even in print in comic books, and I'm tired of that.
Cock-blocking, wow.
I'm going to have to use aggressive language sometimes, Captain. I can't describe something. That's what it is. That's exactly what it is. What was something something else I wanted to mention as well. I lost my train of thought. But it was something.
Constantine?
Well, we got to talk about that. Well, actually, there's black folks in Constantine too, isn't there? Oh, yeah. The gentleman, well, he's an angel. From Oz and from Lost, Harold Perrineau. He's in there. Well, let's go to Constantine. I'll come back to Hallie in a minute. What about Constantine? Was that leaked? I don't think that was formally on NBC yet. Is that true, Daryl?
It wasn't formally on NBC yet. It was leaked out. We've had a rash of that happening. The news about Deanna Pilgrim on Powers leaked that she was going to be black. The first Doctor Who episode with the new Doctor leaked out already. So, again, social media, the technological age is great. But you know what? You got to increase your protection a little bit here, creators, because your stuff is getting out there. Now,
that's intentional, Daryl. Come on.
You think it's intentional? Well, you know what? DC's doing it all the time with these rumors. So, you know, I shouldn't be surprised. Now, with the Constantine thing, it looks kind of good. My thing is with it.
What?
Wait. It looks kind of good. I'm judging it off of that NBC has Grimm, NBC has Dracula, all right? They're going with this kind of block that they're doing. It looks kind of good. But there it is. You need to build the foundation. Looks kind of isn't going to get the job done with Constantine because you know how vocal Vertigo fans are. Vertigo fans are the template behind the innovators behind the recent indie movement with the comic books, where everybody's going to the indie sensibilities with some of the mainstream books in the lines. You know, these fans are going to be rabid if you suck. You can't just have kind of good here, NBC. Constantine has to hit it out of the box, all right? So if that's your finished product, your second episode better damn well be better than that because those Vertigo fans will eat you alive. Afronerd?
Can I say something?
Sure.
No. Well, this is the first time, Daryl, I'm totally opposite from you.
Okay.
Pertaining to anything. Normally, we're pretty close. Normally. You know, sometimes you're very high and I'm a little bit below that, or sometimes I'm high and you're a little bit below that. You know what? I'm on the opposite spectrum when it comes to this. Now I got to go into film speak. Now, Sergio will know about this and probably also Q-Storm. They have something called the beat of the scenes. The beat for all of these scenes is wrong. All right, everything is just out of place. All right, so you have that going on. The lighting for some of the scenes, not good, in my opinion. The lead actor, he's legitimate,
all the people around him, as far as I'm concerned, they suck. It needs to be tightened up. And maybe that's why they went ahead and released that, to get the reaction to see what they can go back and change, because sometimes that happens.
Yeah, they already changed two of the actors, one of the actors and one of the actresses. They already did that.
Well, there you go. There you go. Because I thought it was terrible. I just thought it was terrible, man. For having a decent-sized budget, I was like, what? Come on. Considering some of these things that I'm looking at, I know we're dealing with Penny Dreadful, but that's Showtime, and then you have all these other networks and everything. It's big, 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 big money. But you have to come in somewhere close. You understand? You have to come in somewhere close, because what's out there, the bar has been raised. That's the reality of it. So I just thought it sucked. But let's see what happens later on. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you should have brought up Penny Dreadful, because they're acting on Penny Dreadful is on the next level. You can't even put Constantine and Penny Dreadful in the same universe.
Yeah.
Not acting.
No,
nope. you you just brought it to my attention, because I really sometimes and Captain knows the Dal and I we will take what when the stuff comes on screen, we're excited on some level. I'm happy to see Constantine just because it's a DC property or Vertigo property, so I'm going to give half of it a little something because I'm glad to see Constantine on TV. I might give a jaded perspective on Constantine, but he's right about it. But when he said Penny Dreadful, I said, wait a minute, Penny Dreadful, their acting is on the next. They're committed to that thing. They're in it. So maybe he has a point that the lead actor for Constantine looks like Constantine, has the cab. And the trench coat, yeah, he's pretty much the guy. But everything else around him, a little lame.
Well, that's why we're also telling you, man, grab some Maalox, grab some Pepto-Bismol, sit down and check out that opening pilot of The Strain. Do it. Do it.
Yeah, so
if you are a horror fan out there and you love Penny Dreadful, it's not that high class. But check out how Guillermo del Toro sets a mood and makes everything, well, what would you say, Captain, behind the eight ball one time? Like, worst case scenario right off the bat? Just throws you right in. The thing with the Constantine thing is, like I said, it's good. But good isn't going to get it here. Constantine needed to be, like, 80s Swamp Thing, not television, 80s Swamp Thing literature going into the 90s, like Preacher, like, you know, where one time you get sucked into the TV show one time. You get sucked in. There's going to be jumps, there's going to be scares, there's going to be witty banter from Constantine, but you need to be sucked in. And that's the one thing that leaked pilot did not do. It did not suck you in. The only guys that are going to find that acceptable is longtime readers of Constantine or guys familiar with the source material. And that's not good.
Let's take a quick break, gentlemen, because we've been talking nonstop. I'll take a quick break. I want to help out Q Storm and his son with Comic-Con etiquette.
Yes.
We got to talk about this because I don't want to leave him hanging, and we'll probably run into each other during that event anyway. I'm definitely going, so I think I have a 4-day ticket. So, and he asked about buying tickets. If you didn't buy it when you told me about this, Q, you may want to buy it ASAP, because at some point those tickets, this thing is, it gets bigger and bigger each year exponentially, and before you know it, they're going to be on eBay struggling to pay a lot more. So you may want to go to NewYorkComicCon.com and pick up the tickets while you can. No joke. Darryl, you would agree with that, right?
Oh, yeah. Go grab your things right now. I don't like how they set up this ticket model this year. This year it's screwing a lot of fans out, and there's already tickets on eBay going in the upwards of the nearing the thousands, like, really?
It gets to be pretty ridiculous. All right, gentlemen, let's go to a quick groove, Urban Alternative Groove. Again, this is
I guess, a modified mixtape show. We had Professor Foster come through, and we just powered through. The Uncanny is sticking around. This is Sometimes by Brand New Heavy. Sometimes. We'll be right back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Come on, ma, we got to make things right. Sometimes we really need to make things right. Come on, ma, we got to make things right. It's the abstract, baby, got to make things right.
Talking about a revolution, or maybe just a change of mind. Working on my constitution, I began to realize I've been doing wrong forever. Trouble was my favorite game, yeah. Breaking hearts I thought was so clever, but I'm the one who got her playing her. Never could see it coming, no. Never could feel it till it's coming, no. But all of that don't mean nothing, no. When you're all alone, oh. Sometimes you gotta do right to be happy. One time you gotta believe in what you feel inside. Sometimes you gotta do right to find happy. Looking at a transformation that's brought about a change in me. Love's a brand new situation. Never have I felt so free. 'Cause I can see it coming, yeah, yeah. And I can feel it calling.
Your man could be a little wild. Sometimes I need the love to get me open, 'cause I'm hoping that we can make it peaches and cream. Intervene inside my dream with your high class thing. Got me slitting at my seam like a fat cat gasping. I'm asking, can you marry me? I'm saying I'm asking. Sometimes a fella need to do the thing that's right, whether it be making love or holding the mic. So come on, ma, we got to make things right. Sometimes we really need to make things right. Come on, ma, we got to make things right. Sometimes we really, really got to make things right. Come on, ma, we got to make things right. Sometimes we really need to make things right. Sometimes we really need to make things right. It's the abstract, baby, hold your hand while I play.
We're back. Once again, you might have recognized Q-Tip's voice in that groove. Again, that was Sometimes, Brand New Heavies, featuring the great St. Albans' own Q-Tip. This is the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio, kind of a mix of the mashup and our regular programming. We have Professor William Foster from Naugatuck Community Valley College, Valley Community College. And we just felt like we had to power through. So it is what it is. Let me give an applause to that last groove. Friend of the show from Q Storm Media. He was asking about, asking about this upcoming New York Comic Con. And this thing has grown exponentially. I think the first one, Daryl, they were unable for it to really go off properly. I think they didn't really measure how many people were really were prepared for how many people were going to attend this thing. I think they just rented out maybe a third of the arena or maybe half of the arena. Now they give up the whole thing. They have to. Who didn't know that? I think it was 2006? Was that the first one, Daryl?
The first one in these new surroundings. It's been around for a while, but it mainly grew to this size when they also included the New York Anime Con as a part of it. So that's where they needed the whole Jacob Javits. And I would say 2007 is when it became everything, where they got
right.
The full use of everything. So,
well, to Q-Stone's concern, this is a big thing. And he's wondering if his 8-year-old, you know, because of his youth. Well, it's this. He's certainly old enough to attend this thing, so you don't have to worry about his age. But it's a big to-do. It's a big to-do. It's a big spectacle. There's going to be, as Daryl just talked about, inferred, there's going to be anime there. There's going to be video gaming there. There's going to be panels. I'm hearing that Stephen Amell,
Amell.
I'm always getting his name. Amell. Arrow. He's making an appearance. You're going to see celebrities. You're going to see your favorite comic book creators. There's going to be folks selling, quote-unquote, swag, vintage books. Be prepared with your wallet to a certain degree. It's a big thing. There is an app. It might even be available now. There's an app that should be able to help you as to how to kind of navigate this thing. Daryl, what would you instruct Q-Storm, especially with having his son come along? Check out the black panels also. That goes without saying.
The first thing I do with any one of these is go straight to the webpage. The reason why is if you go to the NewYorkComicCon.com, they give a listing of what's on what day. Because, folks, and I run into this all the time, okay, you want to see everything. It is physically impossible to see everything because just 2 years ago, the Avengers and the Dark Knight Rises panels were going on at just about the same time on two different sides of the building. So if you're a geek that wants to hit both, it's physically impossible to hit both, okay? So the first thing, whatever day you go, you plan. You plan it. They give you a floor map. They give you all of that. You plan how you're going to do your day, all right? I'm going to hit this one at 3 and then do this one at, like, 5, and 6 to 7, I'm going to walk around and hit the vendor's booth, and then, because usually it's over by 9, 10 o'clock, you know, everybody's wrapping up and trying to get out of there. But you have to plan beforehand, okay? Secondly, you have a young child. Young child's cool. Young child wants to do everything. Find out what your young child's interests are, all right? Don't just take the young child to what you're interested in. Find out who is he interested in or who is she interested in, okay? And make an effort early on to go and hit that. Trust me, it gets the child hype. Then the child wants to do other stuff. Oh, I see this. Oh, look at that, I see it. Because they've already seen what they wanted to see. And in the process of seeing that, they're seeing everything else, you know? Sometimes with kids, they have a one-track mind. I'm coming here to see this. Let's go. But this is a place where if you're going to take a young child, okay, maybe you hit one or two of the things you want to see first, and then you hit what they want, but along the way, the kid's going to be pointing, the kid's going to be, oh, look at that, oh, look at that, oh, look at that. So it's a bonding experience, all right? Don't do like some parents and just yank your child everywhere. Don't do that. This is something to help enrich your child. And third, and I cannot stress this enough, Everybody knows my stance is on respect. Everybody knows my stance is on taking showers. Everybody knows my stance is on Yeah, getting food before you go in. I'll say that as a must too. Get food before you go in because some of the prices are normally high. But if you're a cosplayer, if you're a regular person, if you're a person with a young child, if you're slightly overweight, if you have some sort of difficulty, I cannot stress this enough, wear comfortable shoes. You will be doing a lot of walking. You will be on your feet a lot. Wear comfortable shoes. Trust me on this. Cannot stress that one enough. And finally, you know what? Have fun. This isn't supposed to be serious. You're going to be meeting a lot of people from a lot of different walks of life. You're going to be open to everything here. Anything that you could think of is going to be there. You know, porn stars are there. Wrestlers are there. Movie stars are there. Politicians are there, you know, along with us.
One quick thing, and as far as porn stars, they will have clothes on, so don't worry about
that. Oh, yes, they will have clothes on. But
yeah.
I will say one of the most enjoyable times I've had at Comic-Con was 2010 talking to Tara Patrick. I talked to Tara Patrick for about 15 minutes about her clothing line, how she got out of the porn actress game but is still in the business and a multimillionaire because the company she developed produces music, produces clothes, rents out locations, rents out cars for these various porn things. And you talk to her, and the misconception is when you're dealing with these porn actresses, oh, they could be a little bit ditzy. No, she's like a 161 IQ. She went bap, bap, bap. Talk about major businesswoman. I'm like, wow. This is.
Now we got a call. We got a call. Just not to interrupt. I'll get to the call. But you do not introduce your child to a porn star. I would just put that out. You know. Or explain. Just whatever. Do what you want to do.
I'm just saying you'll meet different walks of life.
Can I say something?
Yeah, hold on just 1 second, Cap. Again, you listen to the Grindhouse edition of our show, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have some callers. Callers, hold on just a brief moment. Captain, proceed.
All right. When you come to the Comic-Con, Thursday is normally for the big spenders. Thursdays are these are the individuals that spend $5,000, $10,000, $100,000 and up for comic books. They go around to all the booths. So actually Thursday would be a good day to see all the booths. Friday also is a good day to see a lot of the booths. You will have some people in there. It won't be too packed. Now, Saturday and Sunday is cosplay day. That's something that you want to see. It's going to be hard to get to a lot of the booths, but you will see a lot of interesting people dressed up as their favorite comic book character, video game, and everything else going on. So it's very interesting. It's very entertaining. Take that down for all the people who are listening, Q-Storm and everybody else who plans on going. Thursday, you can see the booths. Friday, you can see the booths. You know, the booths are where they sell all the comic books, paraphernalia, T-shirts and everything else. Saturday is cosplay day. So is Sunday cosplay day. It's on and popping. There you have it. Back with you, sir.
And, on that note, the Saturday, if you're on 34th Street walking down or you're 42nd, they're going to have a cosplay walk where people from the train station are going to be just walking down the street heading to Jacob Javits. I'll tell you that right now. Because I'm going to try to get pictures of that. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
All right. Let's go to the caller, 484. Welcome to the Comic Shop / the Grindhouse. Tell us where you are, where you're calling from, who you are, and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, it's Q Storm. I've been listening to the show. I'll be brief because I know you're running short on time, but two things real quick. I don't know if you guys are familiar with another convention. It takes place in Baltimore every year. I think it's coming up this month. No, it's coming up next month in August. Otakon.
Otakon. Anime at its finest.
Yeah, I was hired. I had to stop doing it because the rates just weren't increasing enough for me. But I was hired 3 years in a row to be a cameraman for some of the conventions down there. And, yeah, you're absolutely right. Your advice is well taken. Definitely, I think, Daryl, you said wear comfortable shoes. I can't stress that enough. I already had that on my list, my to-do list. The second thing is, you know, I was listening to you guys, and I went to the website, and I'm smacking my head here. All tickets are sold out.
Well, for some of it, people with comic shops in the area, all right, there's some.
Oh yeah, I do. There are a couple of them. Yeah, I got a couple of them in my area. Yeah.
Yeah, that there's still some of them that will be selling tickets to this, or have contacts who will be selling tickets. So don't give up hope, folks.
I'm in Philadelphia. Would they have them down here?
If they have connections to Jim Hanley or Midtown Comics here, hell, even check out the Midtown Comics website. They'll be talking about they're supposed to be selling it either by next weekend. They'll start to be selling the passes. They don't know how much they'll get. They don't know how many or quantity or the types, but just. If you got Midtown Comics on Facebook or thing, keep an eye on it, folks.
Okay.
Individual comic book sellers. I mean, you know, individual comic book shops often have those tickets. But is there going to be another moment of availability from Midtown? I mean, from the New York Comic Con website, Dow? Like, you know, I can't believe that they sold out this early.
And that's why I have a problem with this. I don't know what their ticket selling model is. I don't know who they sold it to that all of it gets sold out right away. You kidding? All the brokers bought up all the tickets that fast? What are you doing?
Well, were you trying to buy for how many? Were you buying multiple days or one day? How were you going to buy it?
Well, I was. My son. You know, he's in school. In October, so I was looking to, you know, take him up there Saturday, get a room in Manhattan overnight, and check it out Sunday, and then head home Sunday night. So Saturday and Sunday.
That was like the most. That's the well, you know, listen, it's exciting. That's like the busiest time. Those days are brutal. Like
well,
I'm gonna be there probably Friday and Saturday. I'll be there definitely Friday and Saturday. Friday's the day I'm gonna go really enjoy myself. I can walk around like a human being. Like the captain knows, the Saturday and Sunday, brutal.
I will say Sunday is your best chance. If you haven't gotten tickets yet, Sunday is generally family day, so there's going to be a bunch
of
other
people. Yeah, you're right. Yep.
Sunday will be the day, but the best thing about Sunday, with the kids and everybody having fun, is some of the celebrities or whatever that's been stuck in the autograph session area and stuff like that, they'll be walking around also. So if there's celebrities you want to meet on the floor who decide to stick it out for all 4 days, you'll see them walking the floor. I met Nichelle Nichols that way. I met William Shatner that way. I met Leonard Nimoy that way in 2007, just walking the floor in different parts of it, you know. I brought up the Tara Patrick thing. That's how I met her, you know. And along with the comic book creators. So Sunday is kids' day, but that's also the day celebrities feel comfortable enough to walk around a bit and explore.
Okay. All right. I'll call my comic book shops here in Philadelphia and see what I can do, see what I can get.
Between myself and Daryl, I'm pretty sure we could work up something. But I could have sworn when I went to the site myself, I thought they just had it, well, you know, we're shutting down for this moment and that they will – break have more tickets available at a later date. Because it'd be sold out in July. I mean, it's
like
crazy.
I said, business model.
Well, you know, Deibert, I'm emailing you all the time. I hopefully we can keep in touch, and if you see something that I might miss, please let me know. Send me an email.
I'll work on it. I'll work on it. I'm pretty sure Daryl, you know, because I know there's some local guys. There's a guy technically that normally would have tickets. I'll give him a call tomorrow, actually, and I'll see if I can work something out. I'll do what I can.
Cool.
Definitely.
All right, thanks, guys.
As always, appreciate it. Yeah, we were talking about Comic-Con. What about San Diego Comic-Con? First of all, I'm going to say right now, I know, Daryl, I think you're kind of half about San Diego, but I got to go at least once. So I may work on this, like work on San Diego, like in the next month or two, like now, for 2015. That's the way that has to go. San Diego's a totally different animal. You got to work on that a year ahead. much I know.
A couple years ahead, hope a zombie apocalypse doesn't happen in the meantime. Hopefully California keeps the temperatures the same. You got to plan for a lot of things with San Diego because that's a different world of conventioning right there.
But we did hear there's going to be an announcement on the side on a part of Marvel for, what, like five or six films from 2016 to 2019. One is speculated to be Doctor Strange, 2016. What about everything else? Anything else? People still say Black Panther should be mentioned in this. I don't know.
I would say it like this. I would look for Black Panther. I would look for Captain Marvel. I would look for another cosmic type movie, along with Doctor Strange, and the final one, and this is my dark horse, expect some sort of teen-type movie, whether it be Runaways, whether it be New Warriors, whether it be New Mutants, because really, that's the only demographic that Marvel hasn't tried to hit yet across, all right? So, well, of course, if it's going to be New Mutants, they can't call it that because, Fox is in the freaking room. But I would say Runaways or New Warriors. I would say look for something like that because, again, that's the demographic in film that Marvel hasn't tried to hit yet. Cap?
Back to Astro Nerd.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm excited about the San Diego as well, because I'm intrigued. That's next week, though, right, Daryl?
Hey, knock on wood. Let's see what happens.
Well, I will say this. I'm impressed by Entertainment Weekly. They have Avengers Ultron on the cover, where you get a better picture of Ultron android, and you have Iron Man along with Captain America. Everyone looks far more streamlined, a lot tighter. You know, they're coming for real with this. I mean, I'm not worried about Avengers. If there's anything about Batman versus Superman, well, I'm assuming there's going to be some announcements on that or probably some footage. Is that correct, Daryl?
Hey, look, the Ultrons look like the version from Annihilation Conquest, which serves to remind you that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 weeks, folks. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 weeks. Anyway, that's the version of Ultron. And here's the major difference, okay? DC blows smoke about a lot of things. With Marvel, you know it's going to happen. Marvel puts it out there, it's going to happen. You know, they don't blow smoke. They say we're going to do six films now between 2017-2019. And, oh, yeah, by the way, in that time, we keep on forgetting there's going to be a Captain America 3. There's going to be a Thor 3. There might be a Black Widow movie. Oh, yeah, wait, Avengers 3 and an Iron Man reboot because you know that's happening too. That might be part of the announcements also. So, hey, sky's the limit with Marvel. Warner Brothers, catch up. Afro Nerds?
When you say reboot, are we assuming it's going to be without Robert Downey Jr.?
Most likely. Hmm. He might be Tony Stark, but it might not be Tony Stark in the suit. Remember,
because
for Avengers, the Age of Ultron, they're talking about him most of the time not being in the suit. And he did say that Iron Man 3 was his last movie in the suit headlining. I took that to mean that he might put the suit on again, but he won't be the headliner.
Well, you know, because I'm still looking at Robert Downey. I said, man, you still look like Tony Stark. You know, like, you know, that's my issue. I mean, people are able to kind of maintain. I mean, you know, he's in his late 40s now. But, hell, he could be into his late 50s playing Tony Stark. He's going to keep it 100. I mean, maybe that's just that's what you do and say when it comes to negotiating. Because he doesn't necessarily have to be a specimen like Evans or like Chris Hemsworth.
Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
at least he didn't do a Christian Bale. I'm never going to take on the bat suit again. Screw DC. I'm out of 5,000.
Well, what's crazy is that Ben Affleck is older than Christian Bale. Christian Bale still isn't quite 40. I think he might barely be 40. So, and one more thing. We got about 3 minutes remaining. I think they did mention that there's going to be another Batman after all this. And am I to assume like going to be Batman for another 2 or 3 shows? I mean, how's that going to work?
Yeah. He's not just signing to play Batman in the Superman movies. If they're signing him, he's Batman for the next couple of movies. DC fans, good luck with that. I know Ben can do it. I know. If you saw The Town, if you saw Rain Dare Games, he could handle that type of thing. The question is, can he carry the movie like Bruce Wayne or Batman is expected to, and what type of Batman would they have him play? If they're already having him play the Dark Knight type of grizzled Batman here in this Batman v Superman, then how is that going to sustain a Batman line of films after that? Warner Brothers doesn't think ahead.
Hey, you know something else? You know, it's always just thinking about aging and that kind of thing. But we forget that Ben Affleck is 17 years the junior of Liam Neeson. And Liam Neeson is an action hero in his early 60s. I mean, so it's not like they can't do this stuff. Even when Downey talks, Downey's got about, what, I don't know, maybe he's 12 years younger than Neeson, and Neeson is showing you how it's done. Believe it in a believable fashion. So sometimes you wonder. I mean, but to see an ancient Terminator somehow. I mean, all this is starting to become moot, I guess, with the age thing. What about that, Daryl? Two minutes remaining.
Hey, here we go. Again, sky's the limit. But this is why I said, my major problem with them, all right, and I'll keep on saying it, is they seem to be doing this without a plan. And they're too temperamental, all right? As an example of that, the news about Wonder Woman and Gal Gadot and how they're not happy with a training regimen. Excuse me, you are the guys that installed the training regimen. So what are you doing? Where is your plan? We don't believe you. You need to get more people. Back to you, Afrinan.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got a minute remaining. Captain, any closing remarks? We're out of here. We're going to have to pick up all that stuff that we didn't talk about. We'll do it to shove it to Wednesday. The gentleman that was killed in Staten Island by police malfeasance, all that, we got to talk about it. The MH17 plane that was shot out of the sky, all that has to be discussed on Wednesday.
Harrison Ford, another Indiana Jones, old man. Need I say more?
Yeah, he's 70. Why not? All right, on that note, the uncanny, as always, we appreciate you for coming through. You came through for part two, shouting out again Professor Bill Foster, a.k.a. Black Goliath. I think he digs that. We'll get in touch with him again. Folks, it's been real. This is Me and the Devil, Gil Scott-Heron. See you on Wednesday. It's been real. Always.
Good show, guys.
Walking back.